Now, Scotland's talking. Call 0333 20 20 401 and join the debate.
Hello, good morning from me, Ali Bally. Welcome to this week's edition of Scotland's Talking. On the programme today, how are Scots being treated by the NHS when they go for help with eating disorders?
If you go to the doctor today with some sort of internal issue, there's no way they would just turn you away. They would do something about it, and it should be exactly the same.
I think there's still this lack of knowledge with GPs and how to diagnose people with eating disorders. They seem to always relate it to being a female illness.
Not only are the numbers going up, but we've discovered a shocking postcode lottery in treatment services around the country. I'll be joined by our chief reporter, Hope Webb, who's been investigating. Also between now and midday, as the new league season starts, is the future of Scottish football in danger? We'll be hearing how referees are quitting at the grassroots level because of the abuse they receive.
They have white line syndrome. It's basically, as soon as they cross that white line, they change completely from being an absolute gentleman off the park to a wild beast on it.
And should Prince Harry keep his opinions to himself about how many children we should have? This campaigner says the royal is right to speak out.
People who live in first world countries need to be leading the way in terms of sacrificing elements of their wealth and their resources.
This is Scotland's Talking. Music and conversation for a Sunday morning. If you'd like to take part, here's the phone number, 0333 2020 401. First on the show, we're going to be talking about the astonishing postcode lottery that we've discovered across Scotland for people who have eating disorders. Our chief reporter, Hope Webb, has been investigating the issue, and she's found that not only are the numbers increasing, but when you ask for help, you could be waiting anything between 2 weeks and 11 months. Good morning, Hope.
Hi, yes. Eating disorders are such complex topics. I mean, people suffering from them can have well-known conditions like anorexia. We've all heard of that one, and we know people can fall gravely ill from that. But there's also illnesses like binge eating, which aren't as well-known, which obviously are still just as debilitating. And these are really scary conditions that people can face. And it's thought, the figures show that around over 1 million people across the UK have an eating disorder. So that is huge. A lot of people we don't even know or who haven't admitted that maybe they may be suffering from this. So I've been looking into this topic and investigating the issue, and I've obtained exclusive figures that show here in Scotland there has been an 8% increase in the number of people seeking help, which was quite shocking, to be honest. So I wanted to see what it was really like to suffer from an eating disorder in this country. Adrian Rennie is from Airdrie and has previously suffered from anorexia and orthorexia, probably one of those conditions you haven't heard of before, but it's an obsession with clean eating. So I sat down with her to hear her story.
It's like, failure, this is ridiculous, like, I'm going to be trapped here forever. And the only way I could sort of try and fix that was stick with something that I was good at, and that was being healthy and being slim and being someone that could eat normally very healthily. And that's when I developed orthorexia. I do think there is quite still a stereotype around it. I mean, people are only now beginning to realise what binge eating disorder is, and they're only now beginning to realise that actually majority of cases, 10% of people who have an eating disorder have anorexia. And I think it's even fewer in that regard of people who look like what they do in the media and actually get access to the hospital. There's so many different stories out there and they all deserve to be heard. And I think it's important that they are heard and people are listened to, because how are we going to get better in our society and our healthcare system if we don't know each experience?
Now, the main advice given to people who think they might be suffering from an eating disorder, as you would expect, is to go and see their GP. But on average, it takes people over a year to pluck up the courage to do so.
That's amazing, isn't it, that they go through all that for about a year. And when they do go and see their GP, you found that that's not the end of the journey.
Yeah, that is actually the opposite. That is the beginning of the journey. Now, I've been able to obtain figures that show, depending on where you live in Scotland, you could be waiting from 2 weeks for treatment to 11 months. Now, that 11-month figure comes from NHS Greater Glasgow and Clyde. They have the worst waiting times. As you would maybe expect, Glasgow is a big city. The health board with the shortest waiting time is NHS Forth Valley. But the difference between the two is massive. You know, you've got other health boards that fall in between there, you know, like NHS Lothian, where you maybe wait 6 months. As you would expect as well, the advice from charity Beat, which is the UK's leading charity for eating disorders, they suggest the sooner you get treatment, the better. Tina McGough is a campaigner who previously suffered from anorexia herself. She's now set up a peer support group in Dundee because of the long wait many face. They were coming to her and telling her more needed to be done.
I help run a facility, a peer-to-peer support therapy group here in Dundee, actually, and a lot of the people there have had lived experience of eating disorders and other mental illness, and they have really struggled to get help, you know, inpatient help, because of the waiting lists and the lack of space, and sometimes they've been offered places all over the country. If you go to the doctor today with some sort of internal issue, there's no way they would just turn you away. They would do something about it, and it should be exactly the same if you're having an issue with your mental health, because it's so dangerous if it's left untreated.
Tina knows firsthand what it is like to suffer from an eating disorder and is super passionate about what she now talks about. But it's not just new patients that are affected. Tommy Kelly is a former semi-professional footballer from Ayrshire. He suffered from eating disorders for over 20 years. And he told me recently that he's seen his appointments change from weekly to monthly.
I've got the local eating disorder community services. They've been in contact with me right back since my eating disorder started. But even they've been saying to me, look, they're really, really strained and things, so they've had to cut back my appointments and things because they're covering the whole of Ayrshire and there's only three of them. I've spoken at Scottish Parliament and things about eating disorders and it just doesn't seem to be getting any better. Like I say, there doesn't seem to be enough dedicated units for people with eating disorders, and I don't know why that is.
Tommy's story there, I mean, I heard so many stories like that. He was just one person of many that were kind of reiterating the same things over and over. That struggle to access help and the fear when you are in that situation. And we know that the waiting times, like I said, they are differ across the country. And so do the actual facilities that are available as well. Some places have outpatient facilities. Some have inpatient hubs with a limited number of beds, like Glasgow, Livingston and Aberdeen. But some regions like Fife have nothing and patients there are forced to travel elsewhere. I also sat down with Dr. Stephen Anderson, who is the chair of the Faculty for Eating Disorders in Scotland. He took a look at all of these figures and said there needs to be more specialised services.
Each area should have a specialist eating disorder service where people can be referred. So if a GP is concerned, in the past they may have seen the person two or three times over a period of a few months to see what happens. The NICE guideline suggests that people should be referred immediately, because the earlier we see people, the earlier the intervention, the better outcome.
This topic is an absolute rabbit hole. It's one that I started to look into to hear people's stories, and I was just taken down a huge avenue, really, opening up different doors and seeing what was behind. And the picture is pretty crazy when you do take a look at it.
So did you manage to open the doors to someone at the top to try and get some answers?
Well, that was the next kind of port of call, wasn't it? Once I had all of these figures and spoken to people about their lived experiences, I wanted to take what I did have to the top. So I went and sat down with the Chief Medical Officer, Catherine Calderwood. I laid out what I had found and asked her what could be done about the current situation. Now, the truth is, a lot of this information was new because full and comprehensive evidence on these services, waiting times, just doesn't really exist, which I was pretty shocked to find out. But after looking at it, she agreed that everyone across the country needs to be able to access help where and when they need it. And she promised to me to take a look at the issue.
What we have across Scotland are different services which look different from each other. Some of those are provided mostly in the community, some are provided more in hospital settings. And what we would like to understand better is what exactly does that mean for an individual. We should have the same level of service for somebody living in Shetland or in somebody in the middle of Glasgow. We have asked the Faculty for Eating Disorders to investigate those services for us. So to map what is available, what type of the spectrum of eating disorders are these services treating, what happens if you have been gravely ill and are recovered, and also to try to map across Scotland what that looks like.
So a promise there for possible change in the future. And knowing a lot of the people that I've worked with on this project and spoken to and who have been very brave to speak out about their stories and experiences, that will be very, very welcome.
I can understand the, you're saying that they're welcoming it because action through what you've been doing is happening, but they're suffering now. You know, they need help now. So until the services do improve, what do you think people can do?
Yeah, I think this is really, really important to highlight, because the reality is there will be people listening to this programme who may know they're suffering from an eating disorder, or who may suspect they are, how they've tried to get help. Maybe they haven't even made that move yet. But there are steps that you can take. Like I mentioned earlier, there is a charity on eating disorders called BEAT. Now, they have a whole range of support systems that you can look at, that you can read, you can speak to people over the phone. There are avenues out there for help. I sat down with Sarah Preston from the charity. Now, she's an amazing woman who helps lots of people, and she works really, really hard to provide a whole range of advice and support. I'm going to let her actually speak and tell you what you can do.
Don't be deterred. Although we've talked about challenges, there are wonderful services and clinicians across Scotland. You can access our helpline and support services, and just to have hope and know that eating disorders can be beaten and recovery is very much possible.
The unanimous opinion across the board is that the quicker that people with eating disorders can access help, the more likely they are to make a full recovery. So here's hoping that this investigation can lead to that.
And I would imagine, Hope, that this is just a start for you. You're like a little terrier, aren't you? You just keep biting away at someone's ankle till you get something done. So you won't be letting this go.
Well, I think it's about letting people, you know, tell their stories and share their experiences and giving people a voice. And it's not sometimes until these people are heard that this type of action can happen. So, like I said before, there's been some brave, amazing people that have shared their stories with me, and they are the true people that really need to be recognised and rewarded.
Indeed. Thank you very much indeed, Hope. Chief reporter there, Hope Webb, with that story on eating disorders. If you are one of those sufferers, or indeed you've got someone in your family that has been or is suffering from an eating disorder, and you'd like to help share your story about what the services are like, what your GP reacted, how the reaction was from your GP, if you have been to your GP regarding this. We'd love to hear from your story. The number is 0333 2020 401.
Scotland's Talking, the podcast.
Scotland's Talking, I'm Ali Bally. Good morning. We're looking at eating disorders at the moment and some comments coming in on social media. Once again, the focus is on the symptom, this one says, rather than the cause. Eating disorders stem from mental health issues and the feeling of a lack of control an individual has in their life. It is mental health services that are lacking across the board, not simply in this area of need. That's one comment. And I've got another comment here that actually I just was watching coming in that's very much along the same lines. I think eating disorders and mental health issues go hand in hand. Waiting times are far too long, as people with these illnesses need to be seen quickly to find out what's triggering the issues in the first place. As the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to get. And unfortunately for some, it's going to be too long for the help. That's a sad fact, I'm afraid. Thank you for both these comments. Just interesting that when Hope was doing her report there, you know, we were talking about people getting help if they have an eating disorder. And the main advice given to people who think that they might be suffering from an eating disorder is to go and see their GP. But that's where the problem comes in, because on average, it takes people over a year to pluck up the courage to do so. You know, if they've got an eating disorder, they've got to admit to themselves, first of all, that they do have an eating disorder, and then they've got to pluck up the courage to go to the doctor and ask for help. And, of course, that could be months before they accept themselves that they do have a problem. And then when they get there, depends which part of the country they're in as to when they get help. Could be anything from a few weeks to 11, 12 months, depends on which part, as I say, of Scotland you live in. So keep those comments coming in. Another couple here. Here's one that says, people with eating disorders are being failed by our NHS. GPs also do not have enough training to spot the condition. Well, if the patients, you know, they've got to go to the GP first of all and ask for help, surely. So it's not just up to GPs unless they go masking that it's something else. I don't know. I take your point, though. It goes on to say we should all receive a similar service regardless of where we live in Scotland. Yeah, I know. I've long wondered to myself, do we really, really, really need all these health boards in Scotland? You know, should we not just have one that looks after the whole of Scotland? Everybody gets the same service. That's just my view. What do you think? This email goes on to say, unfortunately, there are too many discrepancies in different health board areas. My point precisely. It's time our National Health Service is reformed to make access to treatments more equal, irrespective of the individual's physical or mental health conditions. That comes from Kath. Kath, we seem to be on the same wavelength there. Health boards reformed certainly needs looked at, I would have thought. Do we really need all those health boards? I think not. The number again, 0333 2020 401. You can also contact us by text, as if you're already doing so. Text number is 61054. Start your message with Ali, or you can email Ali at thegreatesthits.co.uk. And Kieran's looking after the Twitter feed as well, and that's hashtag Scotland's Talking. Got one in here from, it's got a name on it. Yeah. Tony, thank you. Sorry, I had to cough there. Right. Tony says, just one of your comments about it being a mental health issue all links together. It certainly does. I'm not convinced there is such a thing as an eating disorder. Oh, come on, Tony. Of course there is. Doctors treat it. Tony's saying, nope, it's a mental health issue and it really is needs looked at. But that there are lots of other areas in the health service and treatment that needs looked at before this. So, what do you think about Prince Harry and Meghan telling us how to lead our lives or how many children we should have? The Earl of Dumbarton, to give Harry his Scottish title, says he would only have a maximum of 2 kids because of the impact of population growth on the environment. He came out with this in an interview for an edition of Vogue magazine, which was guest edited by his wife, the Countess. We're told she was working on it for 7 months. The Prince says he sees things differently after the birth of their son, Archie. Plythe Pipino founded the group Birthstrike, and she thinks it's brilliant that Harry has had his say.
I made a decision last year not to have biological children myself, even though I had met my partner and really wanted to have family with him and was planning to start making moves towards getting the house and working out where we're going to be. But because I became so aware of the severity of the ecological crisis and how that will affect our lives over the next few decades, I think he's done an amazing thing there. You know, he's using his profile, his public profile, to raise the issue, and that's brilliant. There's a lot of people who pay a lot of attention to what the royals are doing. They have a responsibility as kind of public figures and also people who are in the very top of the 1% to lead the way, because this is a crisis about wealth as well. People who are the poorest people in our societies aren't going to be the first to change because they're constantly struggling just for survival. So the people who have power, i.e. the people white-skinned with money, or people who live in first world countries, need to be leading the way in terms of sacrificing elements of their wealth and their resources so as to create what we need to the world going forward.
Right. Blythe Pipino from the group Birthstrike, which she founded. She thinks what Harry said is brilliant, and she's decided not to have biological children. What's your thoughts? 0333 2020 401. Is it something that we should be guided by the young royal in telling those not to have more than 2 children or whatever? What do you think? Do you think it's something he should be commenting on in the first place? Is that his role in life? Does he have one? Got one in already. No name on it, but it just says Harry should keep his mouth shut. All we need is someone like him dictating to the people. Him and Marco will soon be jetting off here and there. His wife is trouble. Watch this space. Stings. Don't know if his wife be in trouble, but surely they're entitled to their views. Yes? No? What do you think? 0333 2020 401. I actually quite like the Young Royals. You know, the two brothers are obviously a little bit of opposites, you know, and the wives are very, very opposite. But editing a women's magazine that is aimed at the very rich, let's put it that way. You know, it is. It is. It's full of photographs and things. Is that something she should be doing? And should he be telling us, you know, maybe two children's enough? Love your comment. 0333 2020 401. You can also contact us on the text, which a few people are doing. Text us 61054. Start your message with Ali. Or you can send me an email. I'll talk to you anyway at all. Ali@thegreatesthits.co.uk. Let's look at the emails and see what's coming in. Yes, going back to the comment I made that maybe Scotland should have one health board instead of the loads that we have. I'm thinking money here, because all these boards get paid people, you know, and okay, you know, I just think that if we maybe had one looking after it, maybe the health secretary, next time she's on, will give us her views on that. But here's somebody's view. Scotland needs the 15 health boards, says this comment, with no name, that's all right. Scotland needs the 15 health boards to ensure that all of Scotland gets issued with money to treat everyone. If you only had one health board, you would be left with two large hospitals covering the whole of Scotland. I've read that a couple of times and I don't get how you work that out, actually. I don't get how you would end up with two hospitals. If the health board or the one, I mean, do we need 15 health boards? That's the crux of it all. Do we really need 15 health boards to look after, you know, that's just more people pen pushing and, you know, all these boards having to sit. They're supposed to be in touch with the local authority. I get that in their local area, but that doesn't always happen. That was just my thought there on that one. Prince Harry is entitled to his opinion, just like the rest of us. Just because he's a blue blood shouldn't prevent him from speaking his mind. God gave him a tongue for a reason and a purpose. Says Phil. Phil, thank you. Anne, how are you?
Fine.
Good. What's your comment? What's your comment, Anne? Anne, can you turn your radio off, please?
I'll have to come through here.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello. Listen to your phone, hello. Not the radio. All right. Are you with us now? Are you with us now?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. What's your comment, Anne?
My comment is that no one has any right, whether they have to say anything or not, whether they have children or how many we have. My mother had 9 of us. That's not going to help the planet. I mean, the planet's been ruined anyway. I think anyone's got the right. Whether you've got blue blood, tartan blood or green blood, that's all I've got to say. No one has any right.
No one has any right to tell you how to live your life, Anne. Is that what you're saying?
Well, to your point, yeah.
If you came from a family of 9, how many of a family did you have?
Me? I had 6.
6?
Yes.
So yes. Having the prince come in and say, stop at 2, holds no water with you at all. That's it.
I didn't see what problem it is with the earth. It's nothing to do with the environment. That's what I say. That's my decision.
Must have something to do with the environment. And think of all the nappies.
Yeah, that way, yes. But we never had nappies like that.
You had the old tiny toweling ones, did you?
Yes.
Absolutely. That's what we're talking about a couple of weeks ago. Anne, thank you very much indeed for your comment. Keep them coming in. That number again, 0333 2020 401. Do you occasionally sit down and watch the football? Do you go to football matches? Are you a referee? Have you been a referee? Do you realise the amount of abuse, absolute abuse that referees take, and should they?
You're listening to Scotland's Talkin', the podcast. Join the conversation on Twitter at Scotland's Talkin'.
The new football season kicked off yesterday, but while most of the headlines and attention will be on the twists and the turns of the Premiership, is the future of the game in Scotland in danger? Our reporter Kieran Fleming's been investigating and discovered referees are being forced out of football because of the level of abuse they receive from players, coaches and supporters. Well, Kieran's here with me, so tell us, first of all, why did you want to look into referee abuse?
Well, Ali, I was a ref for 5 years. I started when I was 16, and the amount of abuse I was getting from men double my age shocked me. Once I started talking to some current refs, I realised each one had a story that stuck with them.
The worst I've had is being called a paedophile by a player, bearing in mind it was adults. You're shocked by it, and it does knock you quite a bit. He came back on at half-time to call me it again, confronting me, and he had to be dragged away by the manager and assistant manager, still yelling and screaming.
I did one on a Saturday, and I went home and cried. That was my sixth game I'd had that week, and I had one the following day with the same team. Initially, I said to the coach, who I knew quite well out of football, "I'm not doing your game tomorrow."
I've only been threatened twice. Once was a player in the amateur leagues who threatened to assault me. I've also been threatened by a fan in the car park after the match. The worst experience is probably the two supporters in the car park threatening to fill my head in.
I was threatened once. One boy was going to come to my house and smash my windows. I sent him off 4 times after the game for foul and abusive language. And after the game I was pretty shaken up.
Some dreadful stories coming from referees whose words are spoken by actors to protect their identity. I was also able to get a hold of former ref Dan Forbes, who said the abuse had followed him off the pitch.
What I found was, being about 20, 21, going out into town, as young people did, I wasn't safe. There were definitely times, after refereeing in amateur football, I'd meet these players, you know, by chance on a night out, and I was being verbally abused and threatened and almost assaulted on a number of occasions with glass bottles. There was no way of reporting it. When I had conversations in confidence, basically saying, "Look, this happened when I was out, well, maybe you shouldn't have been so harsh."
Mm. So abuse is a huge part of the game, as you're saying. Why, Kieran, do you think it's a big deal now?
You're right, it has become a big part of the game, but it's led to a shortage, with many refs quitting and no one wanting to become one because of the abuse.
I've heard of quite a few referees being on the verge of quitting. There was a referee last season on the verge of quitting because he just had enough of the abuse.
If I started running the line in the Highland League 6 months before I did, I would have chucked in refereeing because some of the things said to you by Highland League supporters are dreadful.
We had 5 or 6 do our course last year and only 2 carried on after the first couple of games because they just couldn't take the abuse.
Earlier we heard from Dan Forbes and he's telling us the vile abuse a ref can face during the 90 minutes can have a huge impact on you mentally.
That's why they brought in the Respect campaign in England, because the referees were being assaulted frequently. Okay, it's less prevalent in Scotland, but there's still the verbal abuse, the anxiety given to referees, the depression. They're not going away. And that's why referees are dropping out, because why should they go and get abused at the extent that they are on a weekly basis? For what's effectively 30 quid.
So where's the Scottish Football Association in all of this, Kieran? Does the SFA not give some type of mental health support?
Well, the authorities said in a statement that mental health is of paramount importance and support is available for grade 3 refs and above. So that's refs at a Highland League, Lowland League and Pro League level. But when I mentioned this to the refs, they were surprised.
I have never heard of that. I don't remember being told that during my course, association meetings or by fellow refs.
No, but I've never heard or been told about either, plus nothing on the SFA extranet to say that either.
The support network that the Scottish Football Association have said is available has never been communicated to any of the referees at grassroots level.
That last person was Dan, who later told me it wasn't those reffing at the highest level needing the most support.
So, Kieran, you broke this story with those exclusive interviews, it must have been back in June. There's obviously a problem. We're hearing from people who are proof of that. But what's happened since you exposed the issue?
Well, that's the thing, Ali. 2 months on and nothing has changed. No steps have been made by the SFA to provide support for referees, particularly at the grassroots level. I'm not getting any response when I get in touch with the SFA. And in fact, while covering this story, I've experienced the phone line going dead repeatedly while on calls. Read into that what you like, Ali. And what's really bad about this apparent inaction is that one of the refs we've heard from is warning time's running out to prevent tragedy.
If they look like they're progressive, they'll get mentored. If they're just going to be servicing the juveniles and the amateurs, they get left. And it's in the juveniles and amateurs that you need the most mentoring, because that's where the biggest problems occur. Never mind the pitches at Pittodrie, Celtic Park, Hampden. It's the pitches at Inverdee, Hazelhead, Cheddixley, where the biggest incidents occur.
I think it's only a matter of time before a ref gets seriously hurt, either by an irate player, a spectator, or by themselves. I firmly believe that if things stay the way they are, someone will die on a football pitch in my lifetime.
So, referees, crucial to a game that can't be played without them, telling us they're at breaking point over what they're calling toxic abuse. The so-called beautiful game being poisoned by fans, players and coaches who claim to love it.
Is it any worse now than it was years ago? Let's go back to the 70s, the 80s. I mean, you know, I know that you and your family are big football fans, and you know, I'm a football fan on the sidelines. You know, don't go to matches, but like watching the telly, that type of thing. And abuse to me has always, I suppose, been part of the game. So is it worse now than it was years ago?
I don't think it's worse now than it was years ago. I think people don't realise how bad it truly is. So from my experience, I've had people, you know, come to me in a car park and threaten me after games. I've had, the breaking point for me was someone found me on Facebook and started messaging me. I think that social media has probably made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get targeted for your weight, yeah, at games, the way you look. And the only support there are other referees, especially when you're just starting off. So for your first game, you are watched once, and then after that, you're left by yourself. And at the age of 16, it's difficult,
because, yeah,
you're still a kid.
And as you say, you just hit on the nail on the head there. Social media makes you so much accessible so easily, isn't it? People can find you, no matter whether you might not be on certain social platforms. Mm-hmm. But it's the same. I talk about that with broadcasters, with us. You know, if somebody wanted to make a complaint or say something to me years ago, they would sit down, write it down a letter and send it off. Now, you know, we're easily accessible, as you're sitting here quite, mm-hmm, often, as you know. Things that I might say on Scotland's Talking, I get an email from somebody absolutely ripping me to bits while I'm sitting here doing the programme. And so it makes people easily caught up on. So is there a way forward? I mean, it is, first of all, then, do you think that referees now, yes, they're easily, more easily got to, if you like, through social media. Are they a bit softer than the old referees? Are they, you know, they a bit more taking the, not taking the criticism as well?
I wouldn't say they're softer. Because the story you told me just before we went on air about the person you were speaking to in the newsagents, you said he had a corner flag thrown at him while he was going into his car.
It wasn't just a flag, it was a whole post.
The whole post, yeah.
Yeah.
With the spike on the end, and that's deadly. That's what that is.
And that wasn't yesterday, because it wasn't yesterday he was a referee. You know, he's getting on a bit, so it must have been at least 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So that was 30 years ago. But I've heard incidents of people being punched. Obviously, I said follow to the car. I've had Dan Forbes, who I was speaking to before, he was reffing a game in Peterhead, and one of the players tried to kick the changing room door down to get to him, and he was by himself.
Astonishing, isn't it? And, mm-hmm, and yeah, just by himself.
Just by himself, right. So no protection.
I got a comment in here. It says, Ali, this is a great topic. Yes, I get caught up in the competitiveness of watching my son play. Problem is, we have unfit referees that are overweight and stand in the semicircle, don't move, trying to make decisions from 30 yards away. Sadly, don't keep up with the play. You can see the experience immediately when you get a good referee. I also think that big clubs get the refs on their side in fear of chairman complaining. I understand that coaches can now get yellow and red cards.
Yes, that is true. That's a new rule change, that one. Regarding the unfit refs, I just think the problem is people don't realise that all refs, even the best refs in the world, are human. And we all make mistakes. Like, if you made a mistake on air right now, I wouldn't come in here and start mouthing off at you. And Some people do, but not me. You've not made that bad a mistake yet. You did get my name wrong once, but
that's all right.
I didn't fight you for it.
I get my wife's name wrong.
You shouldn't have said that on air, I don't think. But it's at the end of the day, it's a game, especially at kids' level with parents and stuff. Your kids are playing football. They're not playing football in the World Cup. And I've had referees, I've myself have abandoned games because, you know, parents are getting so abusive. This wasn't a game I was reffing. It was where my brother was, this was before I was a ref, my brother was playing football at under eights, I think, and two of the parents started fighting on the pitch. And it's an under eights game. Like, who honestly cares at that point? I don't think people realise that when we're reffing games at that level, we're not biased because we don't care who wins. We don't have any say. I don't care if you're under 12s, I don't know, whatever team it is, under 12s Park Thistle are playing under 12s Dundee United. I'm a Dundee United fan, but I honestly don't care who wins. It's under 12s. What does it matter to me?
Right. Okay, so thank you again for putting that together. Very, very interesting. I know that you've been doing research on that for the last few weeks, and we've just held on there until the first weekend of the season. If you've got a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 0333 2020 401 is the number. And Kieran is taking your calls as well. So if you've got something to say, let's hear from you. You may be a referee, you may be a parent. And we read of parents, just what you're saying there, getting really uptight on the sidelines. And yeah, it's a bit sad that it's got to that. But once again, okay. That number again, 0333 2020 401. Thank you very much indeed for your comments coming through on social media regarding referees. And we've been talking about, in fact, I'll go through some of the things just in case you've just joined us. I'll go through some of the things we've been talking about. We've been talking there about referees and the abuse they get. For goodness sake, kids are super competitive. You can't take that out of them. Okay, thank you for that. A referee called in with and wished to remain anonymous. You took the call, Kieran. You wanted to just quickly jump on here and without obviously identifying, because he wanted to remain anonymous, just give us a brief outline of what he was saying.
Well, he was saying that he is a ref from the Dundee area, and he's been a ref for 25 years. And he believes since he started, it's got worse. He's been headbutted, punched, and had his car scratched.
That is ridiculous.
I know.
It's for doing his job, and not even a job, is it?
No, like some referees don't even get paid, so it's like a hobby to them, and that's what they're getting punished for.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that, and thanks to that referee for coming in. Just adding to what we were talking about there, you've got a comment, we'd love to hear from you. 0333 2020 401.
Scotland's Talking, the podcast.
If you have just joined us, as promised, let's have a quick reprise of some of the items we've been talking about. Looking for your comments about Prince Harry and Meghan telling us how to lead our lives and how many children we should have. The Earl of Dumbarton, to give Harry his Scottish title, says he would only have a maximum of 2 kids because of the impact of population growth on the environment. Liz says, Ali, about the royals telling us how many children we should have. As much as I like that Harry is following his mother Diana's footsteps and the good works he's doing, I don't think he needs to tell us how many children we should have. I understand there are families that have to go to food banks to get by, in saying that it's the taxpayers that are allowing them to live a comfortable, carefree lifestyle. So no, I don't agree that he should be telling us anything at all. Thank you for that, Liz. What are your thoughts? Do you think Prince Harry has a right to come out and say what he's saying? Number again, 0333 2020 401, or you can text, as a lot of people are doing today, 61054. Start your message with Ali. And here's another one that says, Harry's argument might be more meaningful if he wasn't living in a large house that used to be 3 houses with his 1 and possibly 2 babies. Not to mention gas-guzzling cars and flights when it takes their fancy. Needs to practice what they preach. Yeah. I think they, you know, when they get to that stage, that they're looking for, in a way, and they're looking for a purpose in life. I mean, he knows he's never going to be king, highly unlikely anyway. So he's looking for something to probably stand up for. Has he right to voice his opinion? That's what we're asking today. And thanks for the comments so far. As always, of course, have you got something else to talk about?
Coming up next on Scotland's Talkin'. Any other business?
Anything at all you want to talk about? The phone lines are open for that now. 0333 2020 401. We've also been talking about eating disorders. We're talking about that earlier on. And the fact that it depends where you live in Scottish area as to when you get seen. If you go to a GP and ask for some help with an eating disorder, it could take quite some time before you get seen to, if you know what I mean, if you get an appointment or whatever. It really just depends on where you are. So we're asking about that and postcode lottery as well, asking about that and when your thoughts on that as well. I'm just looking at quite a few comments coming through now on footballers. It always made me wonder why all the footballers chase each other around the field fighting for this ball. Jean looking humorous. Give them all their own ball, she says. Oh yeah, sure, that will sort it out, won't it, Jean? Thanks for listening and thanks for getting in touch as well. And without jumping on John Lennon's bandwagon, but imagine if the level of passionate intensity surrounding football was constructively channeled towards something important, such as improving the state of the world. Oh, how different things would be. Various subjects we're talking about, and one from Sue. Sue's commenting, she says, yes, Harry is entitled to his views, but should be putting them in practice, practicing or preaching what he preaches, that type of thing, helping the environment when him and his wife often jet off with their big planes all over the world. What about their carbon footprints there? It's not just them that do that, is it? I mean, think of the stars that talk about looking after the planet and doing this, that and the other, and then they use these planes. So, I see what you're saying, absolutely. Talking of referees, Jim says, Ali, I stopped going to football matches because of the hate feeling for refs and linesmen and the dogs abuse that they get. It wasn't pleasant. Thank you very much indeed, Jim. And another one on football. If I was a football referee, I wouldn't tolerate any abuse. I would just stop the game, take the players off the pitch. Then the crowd would really have something to complain about. Yeah, but I don't think we're just talking about the abuse that they get on the pitch. It's the abuse they get after they come off the pitch. That the abuse that they get from the players in the dressing rooms. Abuse that they get when they're walking down the street, or they're in the pub for a pint, or they're just walking along the street and they're getting, that's what the whole thing is talking about here, Phil. It's not just on the park. It's when they're actually in charge. It's the abuse that they're getting, both physical and mental abuse that they're getting when they've finished refereeing that game. I think that is the problem that we're trying to highlight here. But thank you very much indeed for your comment. Here's one in from Stuart Brown. He says, on any other business, I've just noticed that sports centres across Scotland have banned energy drinks for children under the age of 16. How is that going to work? And is it really necessary, Stuart says? Is this the nanny state coming into play again? I don't know, is it? Children under 16 ban. I think I'm right in saying as well, Stuart, that some of the, or most of the large supermarkets have banned the sale of energy drinks to under 16s as well. So it's maybe something that's a health issue. I don't know. It's not something. I stopped doing energy drinks years ago and realised they didn't work. So it's something that's, I don't know, what was your question again? You were saying, how is this going to work and is it really necessary? Okay, so energy drinks being banned in many of the sports centres across Scotland. How will it work? That's true. If you've got a machine selling energy drinks or selling any kind of drinks, maybe bottles of water, maybe cans of juice or whatever, how is that machine going to know that somebody is under 16? Kieran's just telling me in my ear here, in one supermarket he was in, he was asked for proof of age when buying an energy drink. So just people are actually doing that then, right? Okay. So thanks for that, Stuart. Thank you. What do you think? Is that a piece of nonsense? Is it really necessary? Says Stuart. That was his question. How is it going to work? And is it really necessary? Sports centres across Scotland banning energy drinks for Scotland for children under the age of 16. How is it going to work? And is it really necessary?
You're listening to Scotland's Talkin', the podcast. Join the conversation on Twitter at Scotland's Talkin'.
The fact that you're listening to this show, you and the station in general, you'll know that we play the biggest songs of the 70s, 80s and 90s. And this week, Bob Marley, Rod Stewart, Barry White, the Eurythmics all helped us give away over £39,000. It's true. And our fantastic competition that we've got going at the moment, Cash Superstars. Could you be next? Listen tomorrow morning just after 8 o'clock to hear how much you could win and that new Cash Superstars name that will win it for you. Possibly, yeah. Okay, let's get back to some of the comments then. Here's one that started off by Stuart Brown asking sports centres across Scotland banning energy drinks for children under 16. Is it necessary and how is it going to work? Well, somebody has come on here and said, these energy drinks are laden with caffeine. Check out a video on YouTube called Spiders on Drugs and to see the effects of the caffeine drug on the spider's web creation ability, along with that of other substances. It gives food for thought. Okay, thank you for that. Alison says, Alison, how could you? I live a more constructive life than wasting my valuable time watching a game of football. John Paul Young and Love Is in the Air. Thank you very much indeed to Hope Webb for her piece today on eating disorders. Also to Kieran talking about referees' abuse. Thank you very much indeed for your company and your calls and loads of texts coming through today, which is great. Thank you very much indeed. This has been Scotland's Talking.